Hello, Haunters. This is a bonus episode of Green Tagged, Theme Park in 30, from Scott Swenson and I. In Green Tagged, Scott and I give our take on the most important news from the past week in the world of theme parks. On this week's show, we do a roundup of quick hits, including Spain reopening for vaccinated tourists, Walt Disney making masks optional, and the new park opening in China. And then we dive into some of the new experiences that have been opening around the world that we think are important and indicative of larger trends. As always, you can catch our haunt-specific shows airing on Tuesday and Thursday of this week. And until then, enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another week of Green Tag Theme Park in 30. I'm Scott Swenson from Scott Swenson Creative Development, and I'm here with my co-host, Philip Hernandez from Gantam Lighting. Hey, Philip.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well. Obviously, I'm not in my home studio. I am. I'm actually, in all transparency, I am in Indianapolis. I'm here doing some work for one of my clients, the Indianapolis Zoo, and I am recording this while I'm sitting in the lobby at the downtown Indianapolis downtown Marriott.
So, because that's how dedicated that we are to producing this show for you listeners.
That's right.
You know, Scott will use his phone Wi-Fi to do it from the lobby before he heads to the airport after he's checked out. Here we are.
Yeah, it may be, you know, it may be the sort of down and dirty way of doing it, but we're still getting the information out there, and that's the important thing. Speaking of information, we got a lot to cover in this show. Let's start with some quick hits, some things that, you know, just are happening and kind of new that we thought might be of interest and certainly of significance to those of you in the theme park industry. First off, Spain has reopened its borders to vaccinated tourists. This is good news. This is good news. This is unusual because they're handling it a little bit different than the rest of Europe, aren't they, Philip?
Yes, that's what I thought was interesting about this, is that basically Spain, you know, previously we joked a little bit about how the EU, they say vaccinated, but I mean, if you're unvaccinated, you could show your negative tests and blah, blah, blah. Spain is sticking to its guns. You know, visitors who complete the form will also require a vaccination certificate proving that they have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19, and it has to be with one of their approved vaccines, which are all the U.S. ones are approved. But basically, you have to have that. The only exception to that are minors who are traveling with their vaccinated parents, and those minors are allowed to show just a negative test result without vaccination records. But there's a whole page of stipulations as to how recently and from where they can get those tests and whatnot. So they're sticking to their guns. It is you are vaccinated, and yes, if you have a family that where your kids are not yet, they can still come as long as you follow these rules, and you don't have to be in quarantine with the family, which I think is critical.
Yeah, but yeah, that's great.
It's still vaccinated, and you know, I think that this is, again, like we said, this is a huge step. Again, it's a little more tilted towards the, I guess, like G7, G20, because it is, I mean, your family basically has to be vaccinated in order for you to be able to travel there. And, you know, you have to have vaccinations to do that. And so, you know, we're pretty privileged in the U.S. to be able to be in that position. But I do like that they're allowing for families. That's a really good sign to open the tourism, I think.
Sure. And I'm going to go off notes for just a second here, because I think it's interesting. You know, everybody's kind of, at least the people that I'm talking to and the areas that I'm traveling to, they're kind of thinking, okay, this whole COVID thing is over. But I do want to bring up something that, like I said, it's not in our show notes. So, Philip, I'm sorry, I'm springing this on you unannounced. But in the cruise industry, I don't know whether you saw the story where they were doing some test cruises, or a test cruise specifically, and everybody was tested and everybody had vaccination proof. And they actually had, and then they were doing random testing throughout the course of the cruise. And two people actually tested positive for asymptomatic COVID. So it's not over yet. But we do still need to proceed in ways that are smart, realistic, and based on science. So, and it sounds like, you know, everybody's kind of doing that. I think that, you know, the hesitancy in Spain, or the sticking to their guns in Spain, I think is not necessarily a bad thing. I think everybody has to do, and every government has to do what they think is right for them. Even here, you know, now that I'm out of Florida, which is like masks, we don't need no masks. Now that I'm in Indianapolis, the rules are basically, if you have been vaccinated, you are, it is an option for you to wear a mask if you choose to. They're not asking for proof. However, there are, like in the hotel, for example, you can't approach the front desk unless you're wearing a mask. And all of the staff is still wearing a mask here at the hotel. So, you know, I think people are making their right choices, and and kind of figuring out, you know, kind of testing the waters again. And I think that's what we're going to have to do in order to get into some sense of normalcy. And, you know, speaking of optional, we mentioned on our one of our last shows that SeaWorld and Universal had sort of made mask wearing optional for those guests who have been vaccinated. And guess who has followed suit? Yep, that's right. It's Disney. So
yeah, didn't we say? I feel like I mentioned something about how we were like, I'm sure this is coming next week. Oh, here we are.
They listen to us. They listen to our show. Everybody at Disney, they make decisions based on what mm-hmm. Scott and Philip say.
Yeah, right. All right.
Oh, we're going to get letters. Yeah.
I hope we get letters. At least.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'll take letters. So, but I think that's great. I think it's, again, step in the right direction. And you know, for Florida, it's kind of behind the times. But that goes into effect June 15th. And again, finding some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, it is interesting that they added here, just like what you mentioned about walking up to the front desk, they did add here that even though the masks are optional for vaccinated individuals, they're still required for everyone on transportation, including buses, monorails, and the Skyliner. And they are not requiring proof of vaccination. But it is interesting, though, that they're still in that little half phase, you mm-hmm. know, where they're saying on transportation, where people are packed together on these items, everybody has to have a mask regardless of your vaccination status or not. Other places, you know, are relaxed. And I think that's also smart, because those yes. are the places where, and it allows them also to, I think, more comfortably ramp up their transportation, you know, right. pack in more people to move people to increase their capacity. And that is, masks help reduce the risk of an asymptomatic spread on that.
Well, and it's no different than what I'm going through, you know, it seems like every other week now, and that is getting on an airplane. You know, mm-hmm. I you still are required to wear your face covering over your nose and mouth in almost every airport that I've been in, and then in the gate area as well as throughout the entire flight. So, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense, and I think it's as much retraining people to be comfortable with it. Not on and on and in the right places at the right time. And so we'll get all that figured out eventually. Well, and you know, we also had a little bit of a discussion in one of our previous shows about new projects and new things opening. Well, there's a new theme park, and it is called Glorious Orient. And Philip, I'm going to let you cover this because I can't pronounce any of these cities or provinces in China, but I'm going to let
sure
you do it.
I can't either.
you'll have a better shot at it than I will.
Well, we talked last time, you know, even about the expansion of China and how wondering whether or not the pandemic, you know, is going to accentuate the trend that we already were seeing about China being the new kind of epicenter. And I just feel like so funny, because then the next week, and here we go, is a whole new theme park that has opened on May 28th. It's a new Fanta Wild brand, and Fanta Wild is a brand that has multiple parks. I kind of in my brain, I think of them as the Six Flags of China, and they have a lot of locations, and they expand, and the parks are not enormous, but they're pretty large footprints. This one has 10 indoor themed attractions, 20 outdoor attractions, and designs, shops, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the reported capacity is 3 million visitors per year, which isn't enormous, but it is it's a chunk. It's mm-hmm. a chunk. It isn't enormous, but it's a chunk of 3 million, depending on how much they get. It's called Glorious Orient, and it's located in China's Jiangxi province in the city of Ganzhou.
Much better than I would have done with the pronunciation of all of that. So
the last interesting thing is that in a similar fashion to some of the investment we've seen in China, it's like a joint partnership between the Fanta Wild brand and the government of Ganzhou. So just, you know, classic partnership, you know, just like right. we've seen with some of the other Asian governments, where it's like the government wants a stake in that, just like with Shanghai Disney, they want to stake with it, and they it's a partnership. But a whole new theme park, here we go. It's open.
Well, and I don't know whether that's necessarily a bad thing that they want to stake in it, because you know it shows that there's some support there. It shows that they think that there's going to be some profitability. It also means that it might make it easier for the non-governmental partners to get things done when they need to get things done. You know. I think that's kind of interesting. I did, before the show, I did actually find a really nice sort of promotional video on YouTube about the opening of this. And it looks like a really pretty park. It looks beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, check it out.
Really highly themed is what I thought, too. I thought the theming was very nice. It is very much, I say it's like the Six Flags, but like it is much more themed. You know, there is a lot of culture that is woven into the building design and the attraction design. Very well done.
And there's a new Vekoma coaster, so you know, that looks really fun, and it's a launch coaster. I was really excited about it. It's like, oh, cool. So speaking of new experiences, there are some new experiences happening a little closer to home, at least for us. Cedar Point has opened the new Snake River Expedition. And I think this is a very interesting choice for a new expansion, especially for Cedar Point. And again, before the show, I also found a full POV video of the entire experience. And I found it interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, after all of the controversy over the Jungle Cruise at Disney, here is a Jungle Cruise style ride, which I thought was fascinating. It has, I don't think it has any culturally insensitive moments, with the exception of the southern United States, sort of keeping it all sort of twangy and hick-like, one might say. But at the same time, I also think it shows a trend that I'm seeing certainly as a consultant, and that is embracing the family-friendly, embracing something that young children can do with their parents, with their tween brothers and sisters, and won't be excluded from. I don't know whether this is a result of the pandemic and families wanting to do stuff together again, or they've just been together more, so they're used to it. I don't know. But I'm seeing more and more, not only in attractions, but also in festivals, that the arms are opening wide to not necessarily hit the teen audience. They're going for something that families can do together. And I think this is a perfect example of that. So it's a very interesting attraction. Is it of the same level of you know, Jungle Cruise? No, it's not. But it's a similar sort of action adventure. I actually think of it more as a show, to be completely honest, because there's a bunch of live actors in it, and it's a ride through show, and it's unusual for Cedar Point to do it, but I'm hoping it does well. Of course, I'm always out there supporting the live actor, so I hope it does well. We'll see.
Yeah, I thought it was. I share your opinion on all of that. I think the trend I was seeing with it was that it's following the trend of regional parks that are finally realizing that they can invest in story-driven themed experiences, just like the quote-unquote big boys. You know, I think there was a long time where parks were maybe hesitant to do that instead of a regular coaster or, you know, whatever, because they weren't, you know, they're like, we're not Disney, but now we're seeing that. And we saw before the pandemic Cup Fusion opening in Hershend, and we've seen what, you know, Hershey Park is doing with that. And we're seeing, you know, then we saw Justice League open at Magic Mountain, you know, that dark ride, which is like Magic Mountain and dark rides, you know, that's, I mean, it's so, you know, and they've been very popular, and they've been doing well. And to your point, is it the quality of Disney? No, it isn't. But I think it's all perspective, right? Look at where Sandusky, Ohio, and like the surrounding area. It's not like they have a Disney anywhere near them or anything of that caliber. So I think within the context, it is very well. It's a huge step in the theme direction.
Agreed.
Ahead of what anybody else in the area is doing. And so because of that, it'll stand out.
I think it's the pendulum swinging back and forth. You know, I think that there was a time when all of the smaller or the regional or the, I don't even want to say tier two, because they're just a different tier, But when the non-Disney, non-Universal parks, let's put it that way, all tried to do something that was story-based, and because they didn't do it to the level that Disney did it, they said, well, let's embrace what we can do, which is great coasters and thrill rides and that sort of thing. And now the pendulum has swung back. I do think it's a bold move, especially in a time where we're having staffing issues, to do something that is so actor-staff reliant, because there are one, yeah. two, three, four, five, I think six performance positions throughout the course of the experience, and they are all integral to the experience. So I hope it works out well, and I hope there's lots of it. So if you're mm-hmm. If you're an actor in and around Sandusky, Ohio, go check it out, because they're probably going to be auditioning all the time. So that'll be very cool. Not only is there a sort of family-friendly element opening at Cedar Point, there's also a new sort of family-friendly interactive thing happening in London, and that is Hasbro unveils the new Monopoly experience. This looks like so much fun to me, and it just screams millennial. It just screams, let's do yeah. something. Let's not just look at something. Let's do something. It is, as the name suggests, a life-size Monopoly experience. And it uses elements mm-hmm. from escape rooms. It uses elements of gamification, which is a word I don't want to use ever again, because I think it's become the next buzzword. But it is an element. There are elements that you have to actually accomplish things in order to, quote unquote, acquire your properties in Monopoly, and you play in teams, and I think it looks like it's a great step forward, and it looks like London is embracing this new millennial experience significantly quicker than folks in the US.
Mm-hmm. I don't have much else to say. I like it. I agree with all those points. You know, the reason that I wanted to highlight this too is just because I like the idea of taking something like a board game and using it like right, straight out of Harry Potter, right? Where they're playing chess with life-size people and they're moving around the boards. And it's the same concept of using full people with this type of, with full-size people. I think that is a really interesting angle to explore. The other thing I like about it is I think you get a lot of, I don't know what to call it. You get a lot of playability or whatnot without a huge need to invest. You know, you don't need a ride show building. You know, you don't need a lot of massive investment. You know, you it's mainly people moving around. You know, relatively light fabrication to make still, I think, what could be a really innovative experience with relatively light fabrication.
And taking existing technology, you know, one yes. of the things they showed in one of their promo videos was like a laser maze, where you yep. have to steal a painting off the wall by climbing through a laser maze. Again, this is stuff that exists everywhere. Every FEC in the country has mm-hmm. done it, and now it's being applied to a much larger intellectual property. The other thing that I think about that I think is cool about the IP is these are IPs that the millennials have grown up with. And, you know, yep. they know Monopoly and all of the Hasbro games, and it's a way to take a board game and make it cool again, so that, again, multi-layers. There's also the Top Hat Bar, which is a bar and grill, so you can actually have a restaurant and a drink. And there's also a gift shop, which is selling Hasbro-themed merchandise. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. One side story while we're on this about the millennial brands, you know, I didn't put this in the show notes, but I'm sure you all will see it. But there is a park that is, there's a theme park opening with Mattel, and they're making like a Hot Wheels coaster, and they're doing like a Thomas at the Thomas, the little engine. They're
the
doing
tank engine. Thomas the tank him. Engine. Yeah.
Yes, Thomas the tank engine. They're using some stuff with him. So. We are seeing this. We are seeing kind of the resurgence, the rediscovery, you know, of these millennial IPs as millennials are shifting more towards families, where they're looking, you know, they're the purchase making heads of households with their young kids to take them to theme parks. So now that they are the people that we are targeting, you are seeing these kind of resurgence of these brands. We're digging these brands out. Same thing with the Studio Ghibli announced its plans in Japan, not in the show notes either, but We saw that announcement come out. I didn't put in the show notes because they haven't built anything yet, but they've announced their plans. And of course, it's all nostalgia for millennials because we're spirited away every area. It's the, you know, Totoro. I mean, it's so very heavy on this. So this is a big trend that we'll be watching over the next few years to see as stuff is built and opened.
And really just an expansion of what we talked about in the last episode of, you know, people are, large companies are just gobbling up the IPs, and not just IPs that are video or animation based, but also other elements of our lives growing up, whether it's Hasbro or Mattel, the games we played, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and giving us ways to experience them as grownups. So pretty cool. I say that as if I'm a millennial. I'm not, but I want to go to this Monopoly thing in London, so I just think that would be really fun. But as Philip said, that uses some existing, or as we were talking about, uses some existing technology. There's also a new product or a new experience that has started that has some really cutting edge, or I would almost say bleeding edge technology involved, and that is the Two Hearts Pizzeria, which is Virgin Media and, is it pronounced Musians? Is that it?
I think so.
Is it Musian or Musian?
Musian? I'm not sure.
Musion. So if I've mispronounced it, I apologize. Some pioneering holographic technology to bring people closer than ever before. The interconnective immersive 3D experience enables diners to enjoy a meal together across the quote-unquote same table while seeing life-size holograms in 3D and in 4D quality. And basically, half of this pizzeria is set up in one city and the other half is set up in another. And the guests who are having dinner across the virtual table say that it feels exactly like they're in the room with you. So,
yeah,
interesting.
So it was so interesting because this was a PR thing. You know, it wasn't meant to be like a quote-unquote attraction. It's a PR activation for Virgin Media. But at the same time, I saw this and I was like, this, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, this is ridiculous. You know, it's so incredible. And it's, when you look at the whole experience, you know, they took a pizzeria and just like chopped it in half with an invisible blade, you know, and then like half of it's in one city and half is in the other. And even down to the theming, you walk up and the building just looks like
it's been cut in half.
You're seeing, yeah, it's been cut in half, you know, and then you walk in and then there's the other half of the restaurant presented in hologram and you're served at the same time. You order at the same time from like waiters that look similar. Oh, it's done so well. And I was looking at this and thinking the entire time, oh my gosh, what an opportunity for Disney, for Universal, for Fantawild, for Six Flags, for everyone who has multiple parks where you can eat in a different park with family members. And you know what? The holograms look really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, they look really, really good with the dimensionality to it. And, you know, they have the surround sound equipment, so you're picking up all those little sounds that you don't always pick up in our Zoom calls. And also, like, what a perfect time, too, to unveil this because people are still a little bit travel sensitive. And even now that we're getting travel back, there's been tons of stories everywhere. I'm sure everyone's heard about how the travel services are much more expensive right now because we're hitting that awkward stage, which we talked we would hit. We've been talking about this for 9 months. We would hit that stage where demand is outpacing supply, and so the price is going up a little bit. So it's just such an interesting concept that I think could really be worked in theme entertainment. And I think that the right model could do it very well, very profitably, for and make a great guest experience for people that could just run all day with families from different cities coming in. And it reminds me so much of the Harry Potter technology, you know, with the Forbidden Journey where you're walking in and there's the characters are there in holograms. It's a little bit better than that because the technology has progressed. But I remember in the unveiling of that, you know, it was already, people were saying it was like they were in the room.
Right.
And it's very similar. So
I think the one thing that we do have to take into consideration is the reason part of this works, or the part of the reason that this works so well is the confined nature of sitting at a table in a restaurant. Yeah. Because the lighting is stellar, the foil film that they're actually shooting through and projecting onto is very controlled. But I agree with you, I think this is a great building block for something really exciting in the future.
Yeah, and I think one quick note. I think this is one of those things where I think that it's going to not be accessible to a lot of attractions for a while because the technology is, I'm sure, very expensive. You know, it was a PR activation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a business model. But I think you could see this in something like the Galactic Star Cruiser, you know, and you could see something where it would make sense thematically and there it's going to be a high entry point meal. I mean, I would say $200 or $300 extra for the hologram experience on top of the meal.
You could actually utilize it to create a holographic experience. It could be the next step in character dining too. You could do a holographic experience that's a one-on-one with a character, which could be amazing because the character could be, you know, in another world, in another dimension. The possibilities are limitless.
Okay, let's see, next one here, we can go straight down to, speaking of other other dimensions. this is not directly related to attractions, but I think that going off of, if you listened to last week's show, we had a little bit of discussion about the scripted podcast that Disney is producing for one of its IPs. And oh, lo and behold, Netflix did a 3-day fan festival. For those that are not huge geeks, they did a 3-day fan festival. During that fan festival, they announced a lot of new releases. They also, what I thought was interesting, was they announced extensions of some of their really popular IP, one of which being Stranger Things. And the extensions include a prequel for Robin, the character who was in the last season, and a scripted podcast for Robin to go along with that. In addition to the scripted podcast, they're also going to be doing a Stranger Things partnership with Magic the Gathering, which is one of the most popular trading card games that's out there. So again, and it's one of those millennial brands too. So we're seeing like and Stranger Things, I just did the attraction. They did a Stranger Things immersive experience, quote unquote, drive-through experience. It's been running for like 7 months in LA. And so I think it's just so interesting that you're seeing these other brands that, you know, don't have the full Disney model, but they are definitely experimenting with going into other mediums. Like let's try making a podcast that goes along with our Netflix series. Now let's try making books. Now let's try making pop-up experiences, you know, and at what point are they going to say, let's make a Monopoly-esque pop-up or a museum, or maybe do a deal with a licensing agreement with a bigger park to do a permanent installation. I think it's coming. You can clearly see them experimenting with extension of the IPs into a bunch of different pieces. And I do like that it's not just a basic extension. I like that they are taking it and they're expanding the story, which is exactly what Disney's doing. I mean, they're basically just matching Disney hit for hit on this, where they are creating more they're creating an official backstory, a canon backstory, using this book and podcast. So,
and I think using different medium to create different stories is very interesting too, because it also targets different audiences. So, you know, there's a very specific demographic for the podcast audience and the scripted podcast audience. And I think that they'll be able to target the content really well because they're targeting the medium that it's being delivered in. And I think that's super smart. Another thing that I think is most interesting and something I've kind of been fascinated about with Stranger Things in general is the comfort food feeling of the 80s. Now, having been old enough to actually live through the 80s, you know, I could have been one of the kids of that age, in that era. And it's not just in Stranger Things. It's the music of the 80s continues to come back. The popularity of board games from the Hasbro era, although they started before the 80s, they were running at their hottest in the 80s. And I think that's interesting because it's a simpler, comfortable, like I say, comfort food time that I think is embracing the APs right now. And of course, Magic the Gathering, that makes total sense to me, because that's just Dungeons and Dragons with card collecting, you know, which is what is there in Stranger Things. And again, that 80s comfort food. So I think we're hearkening back to a simpler time, because in the 80s, we hearkened back to the 50s, and now we're, you know, going back to the 80s. So I think that's, I think it's just an interesting trend just to point out. Speaking of interesting trends, everything has an app. We've just gotten to that point now where everything in the world has an app. And before we even get into this, I was here in Indianapolis specifically to attend one of the largest black tie fundraisers in the United States, and it's called Zubilation, and it's for the Indianapolis Zoo. And even this one night black tie event had its own app, which was an ideal way to send out information about not only the agenda of the evening, but which restaurants were represented, which bars, where they were all located. They were pumping out announcements throughout the course of the night, giving you the opportunity to share, to vote on the people's choice, and even restaurant coupons and advertisements for the sponsors and partnerships. So even a one-night event has a full-blown app. So obviously this technology is something that everybody in every element of the attractions industry needs to give a little focus to. And not just an app that is anything that could be printed. Let's just take our printed map and put it on an app. Probably not the way. You want to find a new way to enhance the experience. And one of those examples is the Uzeum, which has opened a TikTok museum in the Westfield Mall in the Netherlands. And the idea of creating these sort of TikTok experiences, it's quite honestly nothing new. We've used the term Instagrammable moment for quite some time now.
Yeah.
And TikTok now is taking that, you know, to the newest level. And so it's an immersive experience that people can participate in. It's, you know, it's the ice cream museum. It's the various and sundry pop-up Instagrammable museums, but now it's TikTok, and it's creating challenges and that sort of thing. There are other attractions that are doing this, everything from the fairy tale land of Norway, which is, again, I'll mispronounce it, the Hunderfossen Family Park. They have now created a very robust app for their guests, as well as Chuck E. Cheese is debuting a new mobile app with a rewards program. The Van Gogh Museum, which is also expanding their way of interacting online with a new WeChat channel and a WeChat mini program. So I guess, I know I'm kind of rushing through this, but we're already out of time. But I just wanted to point out that now is the time to, if you don't have an app and a robust app, now is the time to start thinking about it. Okay, because even Disney's doing it with Snapchat to offer some augmented reality experiences. You can read more about this in our show notes because we've gone way over time. I know we always promise that we're only going to be 30 minutes, but we're past that now. So until next week, this is Scott Swenson from Scott Swenson Creative Development. And on behalf of my co-host, Philip Hernandez from Gantam Lighting, we hope you've enjoyed the show. Share it with everybody you think might be interested, and we'll see you next week.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.